And all their Republican friends.
Well, you know, good to know. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get started. Is the remote participation on?
Yep.
Ready to go? Okay, we are back at the NCUC Constituency Day meeting. I'm Bill Drake. I'm the chair of the NCUC, and we are delighted to welcome to our midst for the next half hour two people who have been much in the news here at Singapore and beyond in recent days. Larry Strickling, who's the Assistant Secretary of Commerce and head of the NTIA, who made some very important announcements just recently about the U.S. being prepared to begin a process of transitioning control over the IANA functions. That have long been held, those parts of the IANA functions that have long been subject to U.S. authority. And with him is Fiona Alexander. Fiona is the head of Office of International Affairs. She's the person who's most directly involved on a day-to-day basis with a lot of the international, institutional, and related issues pertaining to these kinds of issues. We thought we could just ask Larry and Fiona to just offer a few quick thoughts to start us off about where they see things after having been here for 4 days now and obviously gotten quite a lot of earfuls from a lot of different directions about their announcement. I'm sure that they've got some observations about the status of the ICANN community, quote-unquote's preparedness to move forward on this. But then we want to also talk about ways in which I would think NCUC and other civil society actors who support the globalization initiative can be helpful to that effort and other kinds of synergies that might be possible. So open Q&A after a few minutes. They've got a half hour. So without further ado, Larry, you want to start off?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you very much and welcome.
Well, thank you, Bill, and thanks to the constituency for inviting us to stop by today. I'm glad to see many of you who we also saw on Friday at the very successful conference that Bill ran on Friday. And I'll try not to go over in the first set of remarks too much of what we covered at the front end then. But Bill reminds me that not all of you maybe were here on Friday and are as familiar with our proposal as others. So I probably ought to do a little level set here, although I'm not going to refer to it as the 3M proposal as I did on Friday, which is the Make Milton Merry proposal. He's gotten enough airtime, I think, from us on this. But I thought maybe you'd like to tweet that one, too. In any event, I will start maybe with some observations over the last couple of days and then track back into the substance of the proposal. I think overall I'm quite impressed and pleased with the response we've seen from the community here in terms of the reaction to the proposal. I think every group we've visited with has been supportive of what we've announced. In general, we've seen good support for the conditions that we laid out, and that doesn't surprise me because, frankly, we thought what we were expressing were long-held consensus views of this community, and I think that has been represented by the response we've seen. I think the discussions yesterday were quite good as a way to start the process of getting the community to start discussing the proposal, but obviously there's a lot of details yet to be worked through, both in terms of setting a process and then getting to the merits of it. But just to review quickly what exactly we did. A week ago Friday, we announced our intention to transition out of our role, the U.S. government role, in the IANA functions. Our actual role is quite administrative or clerical in the sense that root zone change requests come through us. We look at them, verify them, and pass them on to VeriSign, who actually implements and updates and maintains the root zone. So it's a task that is not that difficult to perform. It's a task that we think we can step out of without in any way undermining the IANA functions. But at the same time, we recognize the symbolic nature of our role in all of this, which has been both a source of comfort and confidence to a lot of people, but a great source of irritation to other people, particularly foreign governments and some country code operators. So we felt the time was appropriate now to begin this final transition, which has been envisioned ever since ICANN was formed. It was never intended that the U.S. government would play a permanent role in this space. It was always envisioned that the U.S. would transition out of it. And so what we're doing now is this final evolution. And I've made it clear in other remarks that this is not revolutionary, it's evolutionary. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. We did, as I mentioned earlier, put four conditions around our request. And let me back up by saying that what we specifically requested was that ICANN, as the contracting party for the IANA functions, convene the global internet community to develop, through the multi-stakeholder process, the transition plan to replace our role. And we've only put our role on the table. We haven't suggested that there's anything about the work ICANN does at the front end of this or any of the work that VeriSign does at the back end that has to be changed by virtue of what we're doing. We're not teeing that up, although, you know, already we hear people in the community saying they want to be looking at those aspects of that. But we haven't asked for that. We've been trying to focus specifically on replacing the United States' role. The conditions we have put on the process are four in number. We have said that the plan presented back to us has to support and enhance the multi-stakeholder model. It has to maintain the security, stability, and resiliency of the domain name system. It has to maintain the openness of the internet. And then it needs to meet the needs and expectations of the customers and partners of the IANA services. And then we went one step further and was very specific in stating that we would not find acceptable a plan that basically turned this over to a government-led organization or an intergovernmental organization to take this over. And that stems directly from, I think, near-unanimous resolutions of both houses of Congress back in 2012 that endorsed the multi-stakeholder model of internet governance and made it very clear that it is the policy of the United States not to see the internet ruled by a governmental intergovernmental organization. Now, that statement in and of itself led to questions about, well, do governments have any role? And we've made clear since that we were in no means saying governments couldn't participate in this process. We've always believed that governments are stakeholders like any other group, and therefore there is a role for them to play in terms of participating. But it has to be done as one of a group of stakeholders, not as the group that's going to end up controlling this or in some way make the decisions on things. We've also made clear that while the contract expires on September 30th, 2015, things will be status quo until then. Nobody will see any changes in what we do unless and until we get that consensus plan delivered to us. And if for some reason the community can't get a plan put together that in time to meet the September 30th date, there's no cliff, there's no disaster, no train wreck facing us because the contract can be extended by us for up to 4 years through two-year options that we have to extend the contract. So rest assured that we will do nothing to imperil the stability and security of the internet through imposing unrealistic deadlines on people or by basically saying we're going to walk away at any given point in time. When we look at what's happened here on the ground, we wanted to get the announcement out in time for the community to have a chance to get together and talk about it. And that, I think, got off to a good start yesterday with two public sessions on first the technical issue of the IANA functions, and then secondly, an issue that we certainly think is related to our announcement, which is this idea that this role that we play in giving confidence to the system or in some people's minds to serve as something of a disciplining function on ICANN, We certainly understand the community wanting to talk about that, and we were glad to see that that was the subject of a public session as well yesterday. I know there have been some questions raised about, well, is the issue, are those issues going to be dealt with together? Can they be dealt with together? Do they need to be kept separate? And I think our view on that is that we certainly expected that this issue would emerge as part of our announcement. We certainly don't want to discourage any discussion of it. I think the only advice we would give would be let's do it efficiently. And so if there's a way to focus on the technical aspects of the IANA functions, perhaps in one work stream and at the same time take on these broader questions of accountability, and, you know, what does it mean for us to step out of the IANA functions contract? We think it's fine for those to go on in parallel if that makes the most sense. And that, frankly, is an issue for the community to decide about. So I think with that, maybe I'll pause and get going with your questions and try to get at whatever issues have emerged in your minds since you got here on the ground.
Thank you very much, Larry. I've got all kinds of questions, but let me turn first to my colleagues and see if anybody would like to start us off with thoughts on the process or the substance as it's been announced so far. Anyone? Yes, Grace. And please say who you are when you introduce yourself.
Grace Githega from Kenya ICT Action Network. I appreciate the fact that you've come to speak to us. And I will tell you one of the concerns that I've heard people talk is the level of commitment by the U.S. government to actually transition the IANA function and whether there's a level of commitment or whether this is not to preempt Brazil.
Preempt Brazil, how do you mean?
Net Mundial would, of course, have discussed some of these issues, multi-stakeholderism, and therefore the timing of this announcement and the level of commitment.
Well, I think those are two separate questions, but I assure you we didn't undertake this process without intending to see it through. Now it's time for the community to do its part and get together and put together a consensus proposal through an open, transparent, inclusive process. I'm sorry, transparent proposal developed through a open and inclusive process to deliver to us. But so there should be no doubt about our commitment to this. In terms of the timing, we felt it was important to make this announcement in time for there to be a discussion on it with the community that's most directly impacted from it, which is the ICANN community, because the IANA functions are performed here by ICANN. So we felt this was the appropriate place to start the discussion. In no way does this preempt anything at Net Mundial, and I'm frankly puzzled by how people would think that would be a question. I'm sure this will be discussed in some fashion, but as I said on Friday, and I've repeated it to other groups, the Net Mundial conference is a very important conference this year. It's important because it needs to take up larger questions of internet governance, such as, in particular, how do we deal with the needs and concerns of the developing world and attracting them into this process, figuring out their issues, their problems, finding solutions for them in a way that they feel comfortable participating in the more in the global internet community. And I'm hoping that the 2 days in Brazil will have a lot of attention focused on those issues, because at the end of the day, those are more important than the question of who's reading root zone change requests to determine whether they're accurate or not. So I don't understand the idea that somehow this is preempting Net Mundial. If anything, if this opens the field to having the broader discussion we need to have, I think that's a good outcome for Brazil.
Perhaps if I may just the thinking that perhaps she's referring to, because I've seen this in some discussion spaces as well, there are those who've put forward more radical kinds of proposals for how the U.S. might be moved out of this role, and by taking the first step and saying, okay, we're doing it, you've in a way taken some of the steam out of that discussion. So that I think that's just a reasonable thing to draw.
I wonder, everybody should say thank you, right?
Yes, right. So that said, Have you looked at many of the submissions that have been sent? Because there's quite a lot that people have had to say on the IANA transition in their Net Mundial submissions. And I'm just wondering, have you looked at that, and have you thought about how you would leverage the Net Mundial in support of what you're doing, what you would expect to come out of Net Mundial around this issue, and so on?
No. Honestly, I haven't had time. Sorry. That's plain reading going back tomorrow.
Fair enough. Kathy and then Milton.
Hi,
then
Kathy Kleiman. So my question to you is, of the functions that will be turned over once the multi-stakeholder proposal is achieved.
Transition.
Okay, of the functions that will be transitioned.
Because words are important here. When you say that turned over, that some people say, oh, that means ICANN's going to take it over, or it means that there's absolutely something that has to be created to replace what we're doing. And we're trying to be as non-judgmental as possible about the range of options that should be available for consideration by the community. That's the only reason I reacted to your statement. So we use words like transition because we aren't dictating that there has to be an organization created to do what we did. We're not saying you don't need an organization. We're not saying anything. We're basically saying, community, you decide this based on getting input from all affected parties.
Makes sense. Okay, of the functions that will be transitioned, thank you, what do you see as the most complicated or the most difficult or the most political of these functions? I think the oversight of the Department of Commerce is something it would help to understand better, actually. And so what do you see of the functions that might be, again, the most difficult or political?
Well, the basic operational function is the one I described, which is the fact that we are interposed between ICANN and VeriSign in terms of verifying the accuracy of root zone change requests. To me, that's a pretty straightforward technical question, and it's a question that I, again, hope that the customers of IANA functions on the naming side should have a lot of input into that in terms of what they would be comfortable with. Because maybe the community would conclude they're quite comfortable with it going machine to machine without some new person or organization, taking on what we do. We're not prejudging this. It's an opportunity for the community to look at the service they're getting and saying, we can get it just as well through this mechanism or no mechanism. We don't prejudge that. I do think the larger question is this related question of the extent this kind of amorphous idea that we provide some level of confidence to the community or some amount of disciplining of ICANN. I've heard people refer to that. And that's, again, that's almost symbolic as well. But I can certainly understand why the community would want to talk about that, and I'm glad that ICANN appears to be creating a process to allow that discussion to happen.
Okay. Mary Milton.
Hey. Wanted to get your attention because I have two students here who want to ask questions, okay? So the simple one will go first, and then the complicated one will come second.
Okay, it's a simple question. Why did Bill Clinton criticize us?
Go read the full transcript. He didn't.
Okay, thanks.
All right. My name is Ichiro Kuyama, from Keio University of Japan. My question is, with the recent passing of, and it's a little bit sort of separate from the IANA contract, but recently ICANN passed the universal acceptance of international domain names, and now the U.S. the U.S. government is sort of transitioning the IANA functions to ICANN. So from my perspective, it seems like the ICANN is becoming more of an international organization, and my personal sort of fear is that by becoming an international organization, actually internet is going to become nationalized. So each country will have its own say, and sort of internet will become separate by borders. What is your perspective, or am I sort of understanding the situation incorrectly?
I'm not sure I agree with your idea that there's a cause and effect there. Individual governments may do things within their own borders to meet their own national interests, and I don't know whether ICANN totally, you know, as it was 10 years ago, or ICANN as it might evolve to in 5 years, is going to have any ability to change any of that. So if that's your question, I'm not sure that any of this really has a big impact on that particular aspect of it. I don't think there's any question, though, that our involvement in the IANA functions has been a source of irritation to other governments and has probably led to some of the calls that we've seen about, well, we need to have an offset against the United States government, and the best way to provide that offset is to turn these duties over to another group of governments or to an intergovernmental organization. Presumably, our announcement takes some of the steam out of the concern some of those governments had for that. I think notwithstanding that, there's an important task, which, again, I hope we talk about in Brazil at Net Mundial, which is how do you get the developing world comfortable with this multi-stakeholder model of internet governance? I think it's a multifaceted problem. It's partly because they don't have a lot of experience with it. It's partly because their civil society and business communities aren't as well organized to provide the other parts of the multi-stakeholder process. So there are a lot of issues, I think, that have to be dealt with in that regard. All of this stems from our belief that this form of governance to the internet has been a very strong contributing factor in the growth, innovation, and wealth creation of the internet, and our desire to see other nations, particularly those in the developing world, find a way to share in that same growth and innovation, and our belief that the way to do that is to bring them into this global internet community as supporters of this model.
I see three people waving at me, four, but I want to abuse my position to follow up directly on what you're saying before I go to them. Because for those of us who have lived through the past decade with WSIS and all that stuff, I mean, 10 years ago, a number of the people in this room were sitting around with governments saying, you know, America, because of the IANA stuff, America can press a button and you fall out of the root, you know. And America's got this they would talk about the IANA like it was something that was going on behind a fortress with machine gun turrets and bats flying around and a moat and dragons. Which always made me laugh when I think of the person I know who works in your office who actually presses the button. But nevertheless.
Send to VeriSign. Okay? Yes. Let's be clear about what
yes,
the button is.
Exactly. So, nevertheless, my question is now, I mean, I know that you got a lot of people lauding you in the GAC meeting the other day. I wasn't there. But in terms of responses you're getting from developing country governments, you're putting forward an approach that is saying, we're keeping this out of the hands of government. We're putting this into some sort of multi-stakeholder model. ICANN's got the lead in the dialogue and so forth. Are you getting the facilitating role? Are you getting pushback on that specifically from anyone? I mean, are people like saying, okay, that's all right with us? Or are you getting people arguing back, no, that's not the end of the story and we need to have a different kind of model and so forth? What kind of
governments?
Yeah, on the governmental side.
So we had a long discussion about this at the GAC meeting on Sunday. And in general, those nations that spoke, and it was a wide range from all continents that spoke, were all very supportive of the announcement. Many directly expressed their support for the four conditions. And I would say there's a consensus on the conditions because no one raised a single concern about them. At least one government made specific reference of support to the statement about no government-led or intergovernmental organization. And again, there was no objection raised in the room by any other government to that particular condition. So that, I think, combined with the statement of the Secretary General of the United Nations when this came out, that the Secretary General supported this and made, again, specific reference to the multi-stakeholder model of internet governance, I think gives us a fair amount of confidence that the governments want to participate in this process and will do so in a productive way.
Yeah, so this is off the agenda at the ITU. Yeah. This is off the agenda for the plenipotentiary and so on, you think?
I'm sorry, say what?
You think this is off the agenda for the plenipotentiary meeting?
Well, I mean, we don't control that. That, in large part, will be determined by individual governments and their contributions. So we're hopeful that enough countries will want to engage in the process as it's run as a multi-stakeholder process, that there won't be any need for it to come to Plenipot, but I can't say for certainty that some nation won't attempt to bring it back.
Okay, let's take a bunch of questions.
But it may be one that's, you know, got some issues in Crimea right now, and maybe people won't be too disposed to listen to them this time. I don't know.
Right. Okay, I know you have time constraints, so let me take a bunch of questions in order, and then you can respond to them together. So, Brendan, Carlos, Avery, Rafiq, and Pranesh. I think that's everybody. Yeah, sorry. It'll be easier this way.
Great. Thank you for coming today to speak to NCUC. So the IANA functions are composed of three areas: names, numbers, and protocol parameters. And in two of the three, the policy aspects are structurally separated from the implementation, right? So, for instance, the IETF decides what the protocols are. They determine the assignments, and then ICANN actually implements that. With regard to names, however, policy and implementation are part of the same organization, ICANN, although the DOC requires through its contract that the activities be functionally separated. I'm curious if the department thinks that structural separation between policy and implementation would be considered a desirable feature of any new arrangement that might be proposed.
Okay. You knew that was coming. Okay. Rafiq, or no, Carlos, did you have one?
Not necessarily a question, but a statement. I am a Brazilian, and in light of the recent revelations regarding surveillance, etc., I have an interesting position, is that I am reading the U.S. government submission for Net Mundial. I read phrase by phrase, word by word, and I couldn't find any disagreement. I agree entirely with what your contribution said. Just a statement.
And this from the Brazilian left, so well done. Okay.
Rafiq. Okay, thanks for the clarification that, the dialogue will be just facilitated by ICANN, because I think there was some confusion that ICANN may have kind of control in how things will go for this consultation. In particular, when I saw the timeline, it's really around ICANN meetings. We asked that it should not be just an ICANN meeting, it should be outside. I'm not sure what are the plans. There was nothing suggested. And that's also come to the question, the NTIA will kind of maybe have an oversight in this process, how to be sure that it was really open, that all parties were consulted. Maybe some people say consultation looks more top-down approach, but how to ensure that the community and also outside the community are participating? What are the mechanisms that you are, to ensure that?
Fair question. Avery?
Yeah, thank you. Avery Doria asking. I guess the question I'm asking is, there seems to be, and it may only be my interpretation, so perhaps you can tell me I'm wrong, that there's a difference between what you're saying and how it's being interpreted by much of the ICANN leadership. And certainly to the extent that I've had conversations with both root zone operators and the NRO folks that sort of feel that there's a sort of an ICANN appropriating authority to themselves in the words and phrase they're using and the approaches they're taking to it. So it seems that they're actually starting an approach down a different road than your one that you're suggesting. And I'm wondering whether that perception is indeed erroneous. I'm sure you've heard from them much more than I have, but it does seem to be something that has a lot of people concerned. Thanks.
Okay. And finally, we had one more from Pranesh.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming here to speak to us. The NTIA statement is at the same time saying that you won't accept anything that is government-led, not just governmental but government-led, and pushing the multi-stakeholder approach or the multi-stakeholder model. But you yourself admitted one of its shortcomings just a moment ago, right, that in developing countries, civil society just isn't that very well developed, that even businesses from developing countries aren't doing that much better either. There are 17 GTLD applications from Africa, 24 from all of Latin America and Caribbean put together. And even technical participation from the developing world is limited. Very often we find American, European companies are contracted to do much of the technical work around DNS. So, A, do you think this poses a problem to the multi-stakeholder model? And if not, how do we work to overcome this?
And then finally, David, sorry.
Okay,
is that too many for you to process?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So my my question, when discussing some of the proposals around the replacing IANA, there's been a lot of discussion about whether it is to what degree is this a policy function? To what degree is this a sort of accountability or a regulatory mechanism? That sort of thing. While understanding the multi-stakeholder process may come to its own understanding of this, I'd really like to know what your understanding is. Like, what is it that you think you are currently doing when you? What criteria do you use to approve a change?
So we'll take that specific fact question first. Fiona can
okay.
answer that.
Can you, before you do that, just let me double check. David, there's no questions from the remote participants?
There are no questions from remote participants.
Okay, fine. Rock and roll.
So on the specific question about the root zone processing, so under the current contract, it's made very clear that the IANA functions operator is implementing the policies and processes developed regardless of the venue, whether it's IETF, the RIRs, or the CCs or GNSO space. So we have a template and just a fact check to make sure that the technical checks are in place. So there's no, and that's worked out in the process. So in the current, when we did the NOI for the current contract, we actually put out a question on the GTLD program. As you all may remember, we got a lot of pushback from many people in the ICANN community that we were overstepping that. So we made very clear that what the IANA contractor does is fully consistent and reflective of the process over here, regardless of where that process is. And all we do is just make sure the process has been followed through a template.
So it's essentially you just...
It's clerical.
Specifically looking at all the policy process. You are verifying that the policies have been followed? Or?
Well, we actually have the contractor self-certify the process has been followed. So it's a template check.
Yeah.
I think each change request probably takes a couple of minutes on our end.
Isn't that extraordinary?
So maybe I'll start with, in light of this topic, it segues right into your question about separation. As you correctly noted, when we did the last contract with ICANN, in response to input we got from the international community, we did require a functional separation of the policymaking personnel from the IANA personnel in the contract. So the notion of separation is one we embraced. We recognized the international community embraced it, and we reflected it in the contract. Whether that should then go to the next stage of a structural separation, we express no view, partly because I don't think it's my part to put my finger on the scale of any of this. But I do think that that does then introduce economic inefficiencies potentially into a process, which might well be justified by some benefits you get by the separation. But it seems to me that's an evaluation the community would want to undertake. So I know Milton and I both in previous lives did a lot of work out of the breakup of AT&T and the question there of the idea that the control of the local exchange monopoly allowed one to extend their monopoly and their market power into other more competitive services. And it was viewed there that imposing the inefficiency first of the vesting and then putting all these separation requirements within these companies was offset by the competition gains you would get by being able to nurture a competitive competitive, more competitive market in the adjacent services. So there was a very conscious economic trade-off made based on an evaluation. I don't see those same kind of considerations here. So even though separation is appropriate, you'd really have to understand what additional benefit you get from a structural separation, and then is it really worth the inefficiency you create? But that's a debate the group should have, I think the community should have. In no way are we saying don't have that discussion. Then there was the question of how to ensure – well, let me go to Avery's question because my notes aren't very good on the second question, so I may have to get you to repeat it for me. I think at the front end of this process, there's always a question of how do you actually get to where you have something that then goes and conducts the process. And I think there's a natural tendency for a lot of people to have ideas about that. Certainly, we may have complicated it, and if so, fine. It was good that we did so by insisting that this wasn't going to be just an ICANN process, that it was going to be a process that had to engage the IETF, the IAB, the IRs, and other parts of the community. And we were pleased to see that reflected in the lineup on stage yesterday, where they were all there and in a position to, you know, respond and be representative of the idea that this was going to be more than an ICANN process. Still, how all this gets narrowed down into what the process is actually going to be is still, I think, a question for the community. I'm sure lots of people have ideas about the way to do that. I think what we would be concerned about is making sure that there's nothing wrong with having ideas, but they need to be presented and accepted by the community. And so we expect that to occur, and we keep repeating that at every opportunity in meetings like these in the hopes that that message is very, very clear. But I do think that the way, at least the structure of the discussion yesterday, to me reflected a good recognition by ICANN management that this is bigger than just ICANN, and that they have to figure out a way to be more inclusive. But at the end of the day, what we're asking the community to do, I don't think it's ever really been done before at the scale we're talking about. So it's not surprising to me that there are people who are trying to find a way to put some ideas about structure around it, which is fine as long as it's all vetted and accepted by the community through the process. But the idea that you're going to bring 500 people and put it in a room and actually design a process there, I mean, you know and I know that's not going to happen that way. But there needs to be a way to pull in ideas and suggestions from people and then kind of reflect them back to the community with a little bit of structure around it. So we're sensitive to this issue, and we'll continue to monitor it. And certainly, at the end of the day, this will only work if we get a consensus proposal developed through an open, inclusive, and transparent process. Everybody has a stake in that, from ICANN management down to every organization or person who is part of this ecosystem. And so I think it behooves everyone to make sure that that's happening every step of the way, and we won't hesitate to give our view that if we don't see that happening, because that will mean if it's not happening, it means we won't get to the consensus proposal at the end of the day. But in doing so, we want to be very careful not to be signaling or putting our finger on the scale in terms of the substance of what that proposal has to be, because I think that undermines the multi-stakeholder process as well, and we just don't want to do that. You will find, just that everyone appreciates the domestic political situation we're in. You know, there have been a number of articles written about how this announcement means we've given Vladimir Putin the internet, and that free expression on the internet will now be eliminated as a result of that. And I mentioned there are going to be two hearings in Congress next week where we can expect those kinds of arguments to be made. And part of it is there's a certain discomfort that folks have that we didn't, in effect, say, here's the outcome we insist on having. Now go agree to this. Or that we didn't, in effect, conduct our own process and then present to ICANN the solution. But we felt that if we really want this organization, if we really want the ecosystem to evolve, it's just as important to have the community create the outcome as well as administer it, because it's the capacity building that occurs by actually engaging in the process to come up with a solution that will then well serve everyone when you actually are transitioning to whatever comes after us. So we see those as very closely linked, and we want to avoid doing something to interfere with the group, really testing out different ideas and seeing the strengths and weaknesses of different approaches in, an open, transparent, and inclusive way, because we think that will lead to the strongest proposal. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you to repeat your question because my notes are unintelligible to me.
It's really easy. So you just said that it will be an open, inclusive, transparent process. So how you will ensure that it will happen? What kind of oversight mechanism that you will implement? And because, like, for example, you mentioned about the timeline. The timeline is really around iSTARS meetings. There is nothing outside that there. So how you will really ensure that it will be in the wider community within ICANN and outside?
I think what's important is for you and Pranish and everyone in this room to insist on, A, being included, B, making sure that input is taken from more than just ICANN meetings. And I know my understanding is they're already working on that. They're figuring out how to take, in effect, the discussion that was held yesterday and do it on a regional basis around different parts of the world. So I think there's an appreciation of that. It's just that, again, we made this announcement a week ago. There hasn't been a lot of planning in terms of beyond getting the input from the community this week as to what comes next. And so now is a perfect time for you all to make your voices heard to help shape what comes next. And I encourage you all to do. And I think that is also to your question, Pranish. I understand it could be a problem, but to me it's an opportunity. And it's an opportunity for people to step up and say, we want to be part of this. We're willing to commit the effort. And you need our views in order to reach a consensus view of this, because at the end of the day, people ask me, how will we measure the outcome? To me, it starts with, is it consensus, and was it developed through an open, transparent, and inclusive process? And I, you know, said that I think 3 or 4 times in this room, and I've said it probably 20 times already this morning to the other groups we've been with. And you all have to, if you don't think that's happening, you need to speak up and say it's not happening, it needs to change, and say it loud and long.
I know you guys both are busy and probably need to run. Can I just ask one last question? Can I add to it? How can we help? Civil society has been the most consistent and ardent supporter in the internet governance environment for doing this. A decade ago, we argued for this in the WSIS. We got very different responses back then from the Bush administration, but okay.
They're not there anymore.
They're not there anymore, yes, so people do matter. But we've always been, and we've told Fadi this as well, he's taken a lot of heat from different business constituencies, but we've always been very much supportive of this. You're looking at a room in which Americans are in a very distinct minority. We have members from all over the world. We would like to know, what can we do that would help to advance the cause, make the political problems that you have in pushing this less of a problem for you?
So I'd say all those Republican congressmen that you send PAC checks to, I'd call them up. But as a secondary issue, I have to say I'm extremely puzzled and troubled by the idea that's emerged that somehow this evolution is going to threaten free expression on the internet. And I think that's where you all could help us. To be able to explain why you think this is important for protecting free expression, that this community is so committed to a free and open internet that it would never allow an outcome to emerge out of this process that would in any way threaten free expression. Because I think that the people who are expressing these views in the United States are not well informed. I think they are trying to score political points, but it's an issue that certainly resonates with people in the United States. When they hear these statements being made, they take it personally and they view that as a threat. And so it's something we need to nip in the bud because it's wrong and because it might threaten the not seriously threatened, but it'll be, you know, constant friction that we're going to have to deal with over whatever period of time that issue remains in people's minds. So we could use your help on that in terms of explaining why civil society supports this and think it's important for strengthening a free and open internet and not becoming a threat to it. If there was any way you could help us on that, we would be very grateful.
Is that only an American problem with the Tea Party types? I mean, are you getting any parallel pushback elsewhere or no?
I haven't seen any of that coming internationally yet, and I don't know that it would, but it's absolutely an emerging theme in the political debate in Washington. I mean, just go look. I mean, Sarah Palin has made a Facebook post on this. Now, I'm sure Sarah Palin is very well acquainted with the IANA functions. And I'm sure that, you know, if she wants to show up at an ICANN meeting or at NetMundial to participate, I'm sure she would be welcomed. But she's expressing a viewpoint that is very troubling in terms of what we're trying to accomplish here, and I think what the world is expecting out of the growth of the internet. And it's all being done not because at the end of the day she cares one bit about the IANA functions or ICANN. I doubt that she could tell you what any of the letters in the acronym stand for. But it's all being done for political gain in the domestic politics in the U.S., and we're all going to have to be working together to push back against this. Again, I don't see it as a fundamental threat to what we're trying to accomplish here, but it's something we just cannot allow to get out of control.
This can be done. Did you anything else that you wanted to share or ask us or anyone else real quick? Or do we let these poor people go on to their next millionth mission meeting? All right. Well, then, Fiona, did you have any closing comment? No? Nothing? Niels, you got something to – small one? You okay? Good. Okay. Niels, go.
So could you maybe signify the importance of the implementation of the ATRT2 recommendations in relation to the transition? And could they be called as a sub-precondition or?
I've made it very clear that nothing about what we've done here should in any way distract attention from the need for the board to get on with implementing those recommendations. Part of our thinking in terms of the timing of this announcement were improvements in accountability and transparency that have occurred in ICANN over the last 4 years. The ATRT2 report makes clear there's still more to be done. And frankly, there will always be more to be done. But having said that, I think this organization has made strong strides compared to any other organization that purports to be operate like this in the last 4 years, but there's always going to be more to be done, and we've made it clear that we expect that the board will continue to move forward with vigor to adopt and implement those recommendations. And I have no reason to believe that they won't.
Larry, Fiona, there was time when it was very, very frustrating to those of us involved in IG that it was very hard to get people from the U.S. government to really come and engage with civil society, and we found ourselves talking a lot of times to the Brazilians and the European Commission and so on. And I saw Fiona personally because we know each other, but we didn't have organized dialogues much. And it's a notable change, and it's really, really appreciated. We're really happy to be here.
All you had to do was ask.
Yeah, I did. I did ask Dick Baird. I did. Anyway, so we're really happy to have had you here.
Well, it's always a pleasure to come and talk to you all. After all, you guys are clearly the fun crowd here, and so we welcome the opportunity to talk with you all. Thanks.
Okay. Well, thanks much. Okay. So I'm I'm going to step out for just 1 minute. Could you lead a discussion of the board seat election just briefly to update people? We want to continue to go through the dialogue, but I have to step out for 1 moment.
Okay, I suppose I can. It's kind of a strange thing for me to do since I'm the candidate, but hey. or maybe it's time for me to do a campaign speech. No. No campaign. So anyhow, having been asked to talk about the board seat. Oh, why should they? We have the... it's basically a three-year term. Bill Graham is in seat 14. Seat 14 is basically selected by the non-contracted party's house, which means that the CSG, the NCSG, so the commercial stakeholder group, the non-commercial stakeholder group, and Daniel, the non-com appointee to council, to the non-contracted party's house, NCPH, are responsible for electing someone. Now, the election is bylaws determined to happen by mid-April. The reason for that, even though the person does not take their seat until the annual meeting at the end of the year, the reason for that is part of the NOMCOM's task is to balance the board. If you look at the bylaws on the board, there's certain rules about not more than this number from any particular country, from any particular region, and then there's a sort of a unspoken requirement that, you need to balance skills. So if C14 was filled by a person that's knowledgeable in this, but that leaves a void. Let's say Bill Graham was knowledgeable in internet governance, and we happened to elect a C14, someone who was totally not knowledgeable in internet governance. Then that would mean that the NOMCOM would be faced with, okay, now we have a void in the board on this topic, and that's something that we need to take into account. So that's why the elections from all of the supporting organizations come mid-year, and then the person just basically waits a half year until they take. So we're in the process of that now. The CSG, the contracted, the commercial stakeholder group, nominated Bill Graham for a second term. A board member can have up to three terms of 3 years, and anybody that does that is particular. So that is possible. So he's standing. And at its policy, in terms of the NCSG charter, the policy committee is the one that's responsible for making nominations for the various roles, nominations, putting people on committees, fulfilling all that stuff with the consent of the group. And, and there had been some discussion of candidates on the discuss list several weeks ago when I had put myself forward as available for nomination. I got nominated in the PC meeting. And there was another nominee, Sam Lanfranco from MPOC, and the committee decided that I would be the nominee going forward, and we'll see what happens in this vote. There's all kinds of chances of deadlock, so it's going to be an interesting process. We also did something rather remarkable in that. The NCSG operating procedures, by and large, leave the councillors free to make their own determinations in how they vote in meetings. And we specifically say, and then if we don't like the way you vote, we'll yell at you, we'll vote you out, we'll get rid of you, but you make your own decisions. In this case, there was a vote in the policy committee to constrain our votes to vote for our candidate. with only one vote against that constraining. I voted against the notion of people being constrained to vote for me. And so I'm a candidate, and I guess that's what I have to say. Okay, the process going forward, I guess that would be, Rafiq, you'd have to fill that in because you talked to Glenn. Glenn makes up ballots. There will be a vote. The vote is by the council members. So there's 13 people voting. Oh, and just to explain, the rule that we've got on it is that, and this is a bylaws rule, that there has to be at least, and with Rob in the back there, I'm sure he'll correct me, there has to be at least a 60% vote to win, not a 50%. And that's because when the rules were being made, at less than 60, one stakeholder group plus the basically what it did is it gave the NOMCOM appointee the deciding vote. So if you had two houses that stood against each other with a candidate, you had one person that got to make the decision, the NOMCOM appointee. By requiring 60%, it forces any candidate to get at least one vote from the other stakeholder group.
And just also for people who weren't there, we discovered the best misprint in the bylaws ever, where instead of saying the votes comprising the non-contracted party's house, it says the votes compromising the non-contracted. But the question really, what is the process going forward? I actually think we made a mistake in our motion we moved yesterday in that we didn't specify when we stopped binding the councillors. So we'll now have to make another motion to unbind them if we want to do that. Did we?
I thought it was just for this one issue.
Yeah, I thought it was. Well, no, I mean, not for the. I mean, we should have. Basically, the problem is that we're going to bind our councillors if the CSG are going to bind theirs. If they change their mind and start to have a different process, then we will do the same.
Okay. Yeah. Can I correct that? The CSG does not bind. Yep. It's each of the constituencies can bind. And that may be an important point.
It absolutely may well be, yeah. Which complicates it, of course, because then we will have to, if say two of the CSG constituencies remain binding their councillors, will we continue binding ours and so on, is a discussion we will have to have. And the intent, clearly, to explain to everyone, we bound our councillors only to make it very clear that this was a strategic thing that if they were going to adopt a process that meant that we couldn't win, then we were going to adopt a process that meant they couldn't win, and let's go back and talk about process. And of course, pretty much instantly we've had calls from, oh, we've got to talk about the process now, sort of approaches, I think. So
I just wanted to make clear that there were events leading up to this, where there was a discussion on a list, an email list for the non-contracted party house leadership on how to, an attempt to, for both the commercial stakeholder group and the non-commercial to agree on a process where we can have nominees and an election. We didn't hear from the commercial stakeholder. We got no feedback until they came to us with a unilateral decision to have all their councillors support their candidate, effectively, as David said, make it impossible for a candidate of our own to win. So that's why we took this position. We tried to talk to them. Didn't work.
If I can add more, I guess I'm following Bill's lead of taking chair's prerogative to put in my own comments. One of the things about the processes is if you look at the, not only do we have the funny wording in the bylaws of compromises, but if you look at the GNSO procedures guide, it basically states that in annex that each of the party, each of the houses needs to define its own processes, and those processes will be documented in the GNSO procedures. So I went, when we were having all this conversation, I went to look, and at which point I remembered that we actually were never able to come up with a decision on how to do it, and therefore the annex that is pointed to by the operating procedures does not exist. And that's all stuff for Rob. So anyhow, I don't know if anybody else has anything. Am I sure about what?
About that the annex doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah. I went and looked for it. Maybe. Am I absolutely sure? No, you know me better than to ever be absolutely sure. But when I went and looked for it, I could not find it. Right. So. So that ends. Now, Bill entrusted me to talk about board seat 14, which was kind of weird when I was a candidate, but hey, I hope I did okay. I don't know if anyone else has anything to say about it. The next thing we had was a proposed non-contracted party house meeting, and I have no idea what that's all about. Other than we're meeting at the ombudsman's party tonight to talk, but I don't think that's what he meant about, you know. Yes, Rafiq, it's yours.
I think we have tried to meet with our counterpart in the non-contracted party house, and I think we have a cocktail at 7 p.m. I'm not sure. I need to check the time, but at 7 p.m.
Okay,
with
so
them.
So it is the drinks.
Yeah, there is the drinks. Oh, but the Mr. Chair has just come. So
my apologies. I had to step out and take care of something, and I was hoping to get to the restroom too, but that didn't happen.
We finished board seat 14, and we didn't really know what to say about B, proposed non-contracted party house,
well,
other than there's drinks.
Some people know that this may happen. So some people here will remember, but others will not, that in January of 2013, ICANN staff brought the non-contracted party house, all of the elected people, I forget how many there were, like a dozen from each side, from NCSG and CSG together for a couple of days of brainstorming in Los Angeles. And they're proposing now, we've submitted a budgetary application to do it again, probably in Istanbul or Singapore, we're not sure. And I wanted people to know that that will happen, and if so, talk about how we might strategically leverage it. So I just wanted to put it really on your radars to know that it was a live issue, because there was a proposal made informally to the staff, and they had said, no, you got to come back with a formal proposal, and now that's been done. So it's entirely likely that this will happen somewhere in the next half a year, and it would be a good thing to try to use it to bring in input from people. Last time, we found ourselves being lectured to by the staff on a lot of points, which made everybody really freaking annoying. And so we said, if we're going to do this thing again, we want to have it driven by the community. So if we do this, we want to be able to go with community agenda issues. We want people to start thinking then about what would we want to talk about. We've accumulated a whole range of issues with the CSG and how the house is run and what our standing in ICANN is and so on, and we would want to begin to evolve a dialogue about clarifying some things to bring to the table on that. Kathy.
How many people so this is going to be commercial and non-commercial together again?
Commercial and non-commercial together again.
And how many people are being envisioned for coming in? Because, and just a note that ICANN paid travel expenses.
Yes. Okay. I imagine it would probably be like 25 people.
Up from us or altogether?
Altogether.
So 12 and a half from either side.
Hey, just, okay, I should have said 24. You know, I don't know exactly what the breakdown will be, but it would be a comparable effort to last time.
So that's a lot of us. I mean, that's a lot of people that can go.
Yeah, you were there.
I was there, yeah. But there had been talk about different changes of sizes for future meetings.
Not in the most recent versions, no. Cool. But the main point is, we went into that meeting The reason I'm raising it, other than to just share information, we went into that meeting kind of like going, well, let's just go and see what goes on. And in part that was justified because the staff had engineered the agenda in such a way that everything was very structured and we were responding. We've made it very clear to them that if we do it this time, we want it to be very much community-driven. That means the different perspectives of NCSG and the CSG will play a larger role in shaping the whole agenda and so on. So we need to start to think about how. Why are you looking at me so perplexed? So,
I'm losing my eyesight.
Oh, okay.
But it was a lot of fun because in some ways we found overlaps with the CSG we hadn't expected.
Sure.
They're just as frustrated with some of the processes and procedures and time frames as we are. So I thought it was a very interesting experience.
It's almost always the case in my experience that you can build the low-hanging fruit in multi-stakeholderism is to work on the process stuff first, you know, because everybody has the same frustrations and then move from there to substance where you disagree. But anyway, so I just want to let people know that that was happening. We should start to think about how we might want to start to position to it. The second quarter priorities bit, we talked about a bit about this on the last executive committee meeting call, which was open to everybody. And so I'll just briefly overview a few points to put them on your agenda. In the second quarter, what we hope to do is to focus on budgetary matters. Apparently, the budget submission deadline was accelerated from last year. We put in one proposal for support for the IGF to get a few people to the IGF again. And it doesn't look like we can do more, but there's a separate bit, which is that the staff is coming to us again and saying, if you wanted tech support, if we could lend you some staff support to make your life easier because you're doing all this pro bono administrative crap, what would you want it to do? It would be helpful if we could get some people to sit down together and just isolate those items that we think would be worth asking the staff to provide support for. That well could happen as a separate point. A third point I wanted to flag to people, I've made this point to the executive committee meeting, but it doesn't have to be just the executive committee people who know this either. There's this program called CROP, Community Regional Outreach Pilot Project, which will provide funding for representatives of NCUC to go up to five times to go to meetings in their region where they will fly the flag and say that they are representing NCUC and da 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 da. Okay, I'm going to fight. We've never applied for one. People in at large have been taking quite a lot of advantage of this, apparently. I'm going to apply for one to go to the Eurodig meeting, but there will be four other opportunities in this fiscal year. So in the next few months, we could submit others. So I would encourage people to think about whether there's a meeting in their region, particularly if it's not in North America, that is pertaining to internet issues where one could plausibly go to ICANN and say, we want to go there with a bunch of NCUC brochures and talk up NCUC and blah, 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 blah. If so, they might be able to fund you. Okay? And Pranesh is the point person for this. And Ellen's raising her hand.
I just have a question about the program, this financial year. So the events that you would apply for have to be in what window of time?
Well, this is in the current fiscal year. So this is up until the end of June. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Finances and fundraising, just to let you know where we are. We have about, after this meeting, probably we'll have about $74,000 in the bank. We will be applying for funding support from PIR, which usually gives us 15, and CGI.BR, and a couple of others. So we should be able to replenish ourselves back up into the 80s somewhere. So we'll have some funding to be able to do some things in the way of supporting, hopefully, more people coming to key meetings where they really need to be, and we will have to try. We've tried before to specify and publicize the criteria for providing travel support. We will have to get this done because I feel like it's an important thing. We should try to make what resources we have available to more people while at the same time ensuring that we preserve a reserve, so to speak. By the way, if there are people here who were availing themselves of the offer, we had a list, and the executive committee approved funding for the people who asked for it. The people who were asking for one extra night of hotel to attend the conference, who were here on Thursday night, need to supply to Milton, who's not here right now, a bill, an invoice with a confirmation of his hotel, of the hotel room. We will be working in the next quarter on the website, trying to spiff it up. It's got lots of holes. There's a lot of this is content stuff that's just missing. We need more people to volunteer to write things. We've got the basic structure in place. We've been saying this now for a year. Stuff is just waiting to be done there. We need to work together more effectively on NCSG GNSO policy work. There's been a lot of concern expressed by people on the NCSG policy committee about the effectiveness of that activity and more over our ability to funnel people into the working groups and other activities of the GNSO. I don't know if Rafiq, would you like to speak to this at all?
Thanks, Bill. About the policy committee, I think...
Can you speak louder, please?
Yes, more louder. I think about the policy committee, there is some progress, but there are still a lot of work to be done. And about working group, I think in the last weeks, we have more people involved, but we need to support them because it's not easy, because most of them are newcomers. So that's a basic idea, I guess, is to have the old-timer of NCUC and NCNC to support them and to explain how it works on working groups. So I guess the best maybe for next month and to fix and some open public comment, I guess we can make for it. And so building on that, we can make more progress. So we succeeded last time to have three comment in the same time. I think it was challenging. So we can try month by month to do that and to improve our response to all public comment.
If anybody had the juice just to raise, you don't have to raise your hand here, but just to read one of these things and provide a public comment on behalf of NCUC or NCSG, as the case may be, or even as an individual, just to start to make us more visible in this space would be really, really good. And I think in particular responding to the strategy panels would be one thing, but there's a lot else going on.
Just, I mean, if you want to be involved, just, I mean, contact me and also Maria Ferrer, who is the chair of policy committee, and also be just inform us, and we will help you at least to join the working group or also any. I mean, you want to read the report to explain how it works, so just feel free to contact any.
Okay. So in the second.
Hold on.
Yep.
You guys, since I wrote two of the last three comments, it's really hard. You know, this is stuff. This is a lot of work. These are very complicated proceedings in many cases. It helps to have 15 years of history on it. I don't know how someone can just pick up one of these reports and write comments. And then it still took 2 weeks to get it through the number of emails procedurally. So there's a lot of time, effort, sweat that goes into these. So I don't want to make it sound easy because it's not.
Well, it depends on the topic, though. Somebody can respond to a policy, a strategy panel report without having been 15 years in the trenches, and who is.
Okay.
Right? It depends on the issue.
One of the things I wanted to see is if we wanted to create a group of senior people who have been here that can help. So if something goes through on intellectual property, there are a few of us that have been working on that issue for many years. So if someone wants to do a draft and we can say, well, you know, and respond to it, it's one, because not everybody can follow all the lists all the time. So if something goes through on intellectual property, it should probably run by me and Robin and Wendy and others who have been kind of working on these issues for a long time, and we can say, well, you know, we agree with that, but we understand that there's kind of a dark side over here, mm-hmm. and help similarly with who is and some of the privacy issues. We have expertise in here. But not everybody, but not the old timers can't write all the comments, as you've said. Mm-hmm. So can we work with kind of a core of experts mm-hmm. that can review?
Can I call on Avri because she's been waiting, and then Rafiq and Pranish.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to, first of all, recommend to people a method that has been used and I think works, and this goes to the timing. It's true, there is limited timing to get our thing written and then go through the 2 weeks of review to get the policy committee to approve it. But and it's probably going to change again because part of the ATRT recommendations was this current method of commenting doesn't work. But until it does change, if a person writes a comment that they feel comfortable with because it's their comment, they should just submit it. And they should also, at the same time, submit to the policy committee saying, I just submitted a comment. I would like you to endorse it. And what that does is it actually doubles the amount of time we've got. We've got time for someone to write a comment that they put that they believe in, which is in itself is adequate. In other words, that any of us have a comment to make about something, we read it, we comment, that's good enough. But then the PC can then add to it by either just saying we endorse it or we endorse it and we go further or what have you. Now, that's not to say we shouldn't try to have, you know, group things. And I think some of the ideas that Pranesh had and some of the ideas that Brendan had about working methods may, if we learn to use them, help us develop a statement within 30 days. But we should try to do that. But please, if you've got a comment to make, read the things, make your comment, don't be shy, and ask people, you know, there's nothing that happens to you. I mean, having put in stupid comments, you know, nothing that happens. You might get nominated for something, but other than that, you know, there's no penalty for doing it. So be brave, write a comment, and then, you know, we can look at.
Yes, Stephanie.
As an expert in stupid comments, I'll go. So just a clarification question. That's a small one. So it's just there are the four strategic panels. The identifier technology innovation, ICANN multi-stakeholder innovation, public responsibility framework, and the ICANN role in the internet governance system. You need to read them, then send an email to these lists, and that is the process that's going on for there, because it sounded a bit complicated, but that's it.
Okay. Steffi, Rafiq, and then the person behind me.
Just a clarification, because I'm new in this business. To submit a comment with the NCUC label, it has to be approved by the policy committee. Or, I mean, this individual comment you are talking about, is it like...
To be approved by the NCSG, it has to be approved by the NCSG policy committee. I assume the same thing is true of NCUC, that the group in some way, and I think it's the policy committee, has to approve the statement as that. And that's why I say to submit it on your own, and then get that later. Right.
This goes back to a long-running issue. NCUC does not have a formal process for adopting anything anymore because we used to do things in a very informal way among internal groups of people, and we don't have a current policy committee. In the bylaws rewrite, I am hoping that we will do that. But right now, any kind of policy statement that's made, either if it's going to be formally adopted, it's going to go through the NCSG PC, where it is joint with NPOC, and where we have only two people really there, as well as the counselors. Conversely, if there are things that NCUC wants to put out under its own label as kind of reflecting its own values and so on, then we have to devise an alternative mechanism for doing that. Now, I want to go stick with the order. So Monsieur, and then Monsieur, and then Monsieur.
Okay, just to respond. Yes, I understand the comment of Cathy. That's not easy, but we try really to improve the process, at least within the NCNG, to have more people involved, to share the knowledge, and that's why we count in the, as maybe you say, the senior people who are involved in ICANN for a long time. So this idea of having different group, we had the about privacy group of people involved in several working groups, so we can replicate that by for the different topic that we need to handle. So I don't want really to not encourage people. Let's people try. I mean, myself, I joined working group, and then how I learn it. That's how you will learn about policy. That's the only way, I guess. So about also public comment, it's quite easy. Yes, it's just you send to mail address. But if you want to have the endorsement, just to send whatever the NCHG policy committee, there will be some discussion just by rough consensus that we endorse that. So that's why we try to improve. It's not easy, and we are really under a huge overload with many things going on. So we try to do maybe some prioritization to send more people to working group. I understand that's not easy. Like, I am living in Asia-Pac, and now most of the working group is in the middle of the night, so I cannot attend more of them. So let's try to work hard. That's it.
Yeah, my name is Wisdom Donko from Ghana. Come again. Yeah, it's on. The mic is on. From Ghana, Wisdom Donko from Ghana. I'm a new fellow. I work with the National IT Agency, Ghana, and then a vice secretary of ISO Ghana chapter, executive member of IT Association of Ghana, and then vice president of Linux user group in Ghana. And then I'm kind of trying to come up with an open source foundation Ghana. But I want to get all these people involved. But then I want to find out if there is any action plan, if there is a timeline, if there is any guideline or sort of a program, target something so that we all look at it and then we work towards the target for the achievement of the whatever this thing that is said. So that's my question.
You're a very rational person, and that would be a rational way of proceeding, and if only it could be done that way. But the constant problem of getting volunteers to commit to work programs with defined periods, defined deliverables around policy issues or anything else is an ongoing one that we suffer with. And so it's up to, in a way, members who have a particularly keen interest in an area that they'd like to see move forward to try to take the initiative and do that. And we have the ability. I mean, if we should view NCUC as a platform, right? It's a platform where you can hook up with other people who have similar interests. If you want to form a working group with some friends, we can put up a listserv for you, we can jabber, whatever you want to do, and you can begin to devise something. But in terms of the overall, there are so many things going on that it's hard for people to be able to be much more specific. I have tried to lay out what the executive committee has fairly limited role. We don't adopt policy positions. Under our existing bylaws, we don't have any role in doing that. So all we do is try and keep the trains running, keep the platform together. When it comes to putting out policy positions, there the work goes through under the existing system, the NCSG, the stakeholder group level policy committee. But that's not to say that we couldn't improve and adopt statements and pursue work programs and issues of interest to members within NCUC, but people have to take the initiative to do it. So if you have something you'd like to work with, you should send something to the listserv and say so, and probably there will be others who reply, and then we can set up a listserv for you and get you guys connected, and then you can go for it. Okay? That's the best I can do at this point. If someday ICANN provides more support for all the technical crap that we have to do, then maybe that would free up some space. But right now, I'm working, you know, 4 days a week unpaid doing NCUC, and I really can't do a lot more. I teach. So, you know, it's just people have to contribute together, and we have to have a division of labor. Prentice, you were trying to say something?
My comments were, I guess, slightly along similar lines, which is that it would be useful not just to not going as far as adopting tight work plans, etc., and trying to commit people to them, but just to have an overview saying here are the six issues that are going on at the GNSO level, which are in PDP. This is the due date for comments for each of those. Here is the next date for a call. So I'm not saying NCUC should do this, or NCSG, etc. My question is, does ICANN...
That actually is an NCSG PC thing.
Sure. So does ICANN actually provide this kind of... Because many of the ICANN tools, given that I'm new to the EC, I'm new to NCUC, I don't know of what exists out there. Is there this kind of an overview of what all is happening at the GNSO level that ICANN provides?
Yes, you ask Avri.
Okay.
Sorry. I missed the question. What am I being asked?
Whether... Avri, my question was, does ICANN provide an overview of what all is happening at the GNSO level in a very simplified table form, saying here are the six PDPs that are going on, that this is the next date, this is the date of submission for each of those, and here's the date of the next call for each of those in one place, so that people within NCUC have one central place to look at when they are, you know, thinking of jumping on board.
Almost. The GNSO Council does keep, you know, action lists, and it does keep lists of what's going on and such. Is it a collated list that also has all the open comment periods and the dates of the next requirements? No. I think for a while when I was, you know, in the past when I was chairing the PC, I tried to keep such a list there. And I did it for a while, but then I fell apart, and, you know, or rather the list fell apart. Well, maybe it was because I fell apart. But anyway, so it wasn't kept up. But so, no, there are several places one can look. So if you look in, like, and I can point to the two or three places that you can look that shows ongoing work, open comment periods and dates and such. So by looking at two different things, you could probably get your answer. And then, of course, it would have to be done in a way that was for any constituency member, not just for NCUC. But I always thought that it was a good idea for our policy committee to keep such a list up. And that's why I tried to do one. But it takes someone that's going to put, you know, administrative time into it on a weekly basis. And that's where we've had difficulty having someone that can, because it's purely a wiki editing and moving, you know, cross pointers from place to place. And it's easy to do, but it takes a couple hours out of your week every week, and you have to do it every week, and you miss one week, and then all of a sudden it's no longer trustworthy, you know, and such. So it really takes an administrator, which comes back sometimes to the other questions that people say, hey, can we get an administrator? Do we have budget, et cetera? But you're in EC, so you know if we have budget for an administrator to do that. So I bring the question back to you. Can you get an administrator who could do that for the NCUC?
this Pranish, and I think perhaps in what we are asking of ICANN in terms of administrative support, perhaps this could be one of the things we ask for.
And following up on administrative questions, is there a list anywhere of the NCUC members that are participating in working groups right now? Is there a list anywhere of...
No.
Okay. Because for those of us, you know, everybody's working full time here, so but when you have a little bit of time to look up and want to connect with somebody in another working group, that would be really useful.
Right. Again, all this is not my decision nor my preference, but all GNSO-related work is now through the NCSG.
Sorry, what does NCUC do?
If I can speak to that, the NCSG did keep such a list, and it was the NCUC that proposed the NCSG and the model we've got and approved to it. So you may not have been... in it to your personal taste, but it wasn't, oh my word, NCUC was downtrodden by the coming of the NCSG and et cetera. It was a decision we all made together to create the NCSG, and now the NCUC wants to resurge and resurrect and be a phoenix, and that's cool. But and in the NCSG, we did try to keep a list of everybody that was involved in all the working groups, but again, it was me doing it, and eventually I fell apart.
Right, and I'm not contesting the first point. I'm saying only that NCUC, because it does not have a direct policy role anymore, has not been doing that kind of activity.
And I sit corrected because Rafiq says there is a list in NCSG of this type of thing, who's on the working group. So we will try to publicize it more. And, by the way, this isn't really a fight, everybody. This is about encouraging more people to become involved because we're missing a lot of comment deadlines. There's a lot of places our voices need to be heard. So this is about leveraging and making it easier for people to do that. And, by the way, I'd be happy to mentor anyone who wants to go into a working
group. Yeah.
You've had your hand for a while, but the man back here has been waiting too. So I feel bad for both of you. I'm not sure. I think you've been waiting longer.
He's from my country, so no problem.
Okay.
Well, she actually said what I wanted to say. Like, I've been following the list and the conversations. But what I would want to do, participate, I would like to adopt somebody's view. That person should be my mentor. I don't have view for a while. After following this person's view for probably 6 months, then I could start having my own independent views. But right, just to be able to get into the pool and understand what's happening. Because now, you know, you get bed beats, you get everybody, you just scattered all over the place. And that makes it even more difficult for you to make a comment. Because here are various stands, and you don't know who to follow or which one is credible and all of that. So with that, it gets me back into thinking mode and more critical, self-critical. Mm-hmm. So that's why I've been participating or putting out comments. Even
it'd be great if we had a mentoring program. And that'd be great if we had ICANN resources in support of it. We don't, but it's something we could pursue. I'll come to you in a sec, but
the young man
here has been waiting for a long time.
For the transcript record, my name is Shion. I'm from Nigeria, and... And just a brief of me, I also am the chair, co-chair of AFRINIC PDP and on the executive of FOSFA, which is involved in somehow involved in internet governance in Africa. I applied, like I said earlier, I applied to NCUC a few weeks back, and I haven't gotten a response yet. So I need to understand what's the process to application, to admitting, or to getting admitted, and where is the communication happening, really? Because it's all about communicating, and when you say post comment, where are we posting the comments to? And is the comment, when it's posted, does it get distributed among all the members, or is just posted like... someone receives it and decides which one he picks or which one he doesn't pick. Because I think
people's comment needs to be queried, or not really queried, needs to be critiqued. So when we get someone's comment, we need to critique it to know, to perhaps also bring out better output from the comment. So I need to understand the whole avenues to contributing within the NCUC because I'm interested.
Okay, lots of good questions there. On the process of getting in, we have the chair of the NCSG Executive Committee sitting here who has been dealing with this process for some time, and he can tell you once again or lay out once again briefly what that process is.
So the process that people fill the application form online, and then the executive committee of NCSG has, I mean, we try monthly to review all application. It takes some time because we need to review and to find more details about applicants. I'm not sure about your particular case, but if you just tell me, then I can follow up. So we try really to speed up the process, but we receive like more than 20 or many applications and need to have, I have to say, diligent review on that. So sometimes, I mean, we need to ensure that they are non-commercial organization or individual who want to join us. But just tell me, I will check your status. So, but I will try to follow up with all the applicants.
Just to amplify briefly, because we're past our close time. The process is, again, you go to the NCSG website, you say you want to join NCSG, you indicate a constituency if you want to that you'd like to join. NPOC only accepts organizational members. NCUC accepts organizations and individuals, okay? Rafiq and the group that are in the EC will review these like once a month, and they have to go through that with the representatives of NPOC, the other constituency that is in the NCSG. Often in the past, it has been the case that NPOC has wanted to bring in new member organizations that were not non-commercial organizations. And so they spend a lot of time having fights over getting clarification about the accreditation and what kind of organization and so on. And because we're holding up theirs, then they hold up ours. And so it goes like that. And sometimes it takes a couple of months for people to get cleared. But normally with an individual application, it should be faster. The EC will be meeting. You can come and press your case directly. The EC will be meeting this week here in Singapore. Where? When? Tomorrow? Tomorrow morning, it's open, right? And so they're observers, right? Observers, you can't speak. But you can come and watch the process. The EC.
It's at 8:30, but I mean, we will start by reviewing application, but I'm not sure that's, you know, discussing about cases of application that should be done.
Okay, so maybe you don't want to sit through that, but they will be presumably tackling your case fairly soon. You give him your details, and he'll look into it. Okay, Kathy.
Back to comments for a second, because you can see I live in the comment world. An idea to make it a little easier for those, because I see interest in comments, and I'm very excited about this. An idea to make it easier, before you draft a whole full-blown comment, draft bullet points and circulate them. And we can read them and see if there are additional bullet points we'd recommend adding based on history or past or issues. And if someone can start a set of bullet points, we can increase it. We can continue it. So someone looking at a comment period that you're interested in, you know, just circulate an outline or bullet points, and we'll add before you circulate the full-blown comments, and it may be easier and faster. to draft the final comments from there. So.
Okay. So we should close this meeting because we're 10 minutes over and the technical staff undoubtedly want to go. I only want to point out in closing one last item. We can return to these other items later on. Just because we won't see each other before then, to let you know that the next meeting of ICANN is in London in June. During that meeting, the at-large community will be having a conference all week long called Atlas II. It will be, they will be running parallel tracks alongside all the working sessions. They'll be holding seminars and workshops and so on in the same sort of way that we did on a wide variety of different topics. Many of us have feet in both the at-large world and this one, and I would encourage people to get engaged in that process to ensure there is a working group to map out the at-large agenda, the Atlas agenda later this week. It's on the program, and you might want to look into that and get involved. So it's one thing to bear in mind. That will be an important meeting. It'll be a big, lively meeting. Be a lot of stuff going on, and certainly one that we in the corridor coming up to it, aside from all the other things we have to do, including the bylaws, should try to go into it a little bit prepared. Now, Rafiq, we have 20 minutes to eat lunch, and the NCSG will be meeting at 1 o'clock. And what can you make? Do you want to just briefly overview the agenda so people know what they're going to be doing?
I checked his application. He just applied 3 days ago. I mean, in 20th of March. So, so.
We want to get you on board as quickly as possible, but you do have to wait until the next time the group can meet and review the applications.
That's okay. Okay. So, yes, basically just we start quickly to get reports from NCUC and NPOC meetings, and then we will have a meeting with the expert working group on the new directory service, or it's better to say the who is, so for 30 minutes to 35 minutes. So maybe we can hear from the NCSG Policy Committee in particular just to prepare for the GNSO Council on Wednesday. And then we need to focus really on the in the meeting with the ICANN board. We have some proposal, but we need to work on them and to know who will take the lead on each.
This is worth emphasizing if it's your first meeting and you don't know this. At every meeting, NCSG, that is both us and NPOC, meets with the ICANN Board of Directors for about an hour and a half in a big room. And basically we have some agreed questions that we worked out in advance that we've proposed, and then they have questions they've proposed, and we kind of grill each other back and forth, and that's a good show to watch. So you should definitely want to make that, and that's on the website.
And just to remind people, it's in Indiana room at 1 p.m., Indiana.
Not the Brazos.
Brass
Pass.
Okay,
no. Just to know, it's really hard to find from this side, all the way in the back, all the way to the right. You have to look for it, so allow a minute or two to find it. Again, on this side, as far back as you can get, all the way in the right.
Okay, everybody wants to go, so thank you very much for staying over. Appreciate your help. And we'll see you at the NCUC meeting, NCSG meeting.